Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to Working, the podcast about what people do all day. I'm Jacob Brogan. This season on Working, we've been going to the White House, talking to some of the political veterans who operate within its walls about the particulars of their jobs. This week, however, we spoke to someone who was a little less familiar with the institution. Chase Woods, a rising senior at the University of Chicago, served as an intern at the White House this past summer. He talked to us about how he found his way into that role and what he did during his time there. We spoke to him about everything from his daily decisions about where to eat lunch to the time he nerded out when he saw Merrick Garland in the hallway. If you've ever wondered what it's like to be one of the least powerful people in one of the most powerful places on Earth, this episode is for you. And in a Slate Plus Extra, Woods chats with former Slate intern Ian Philbrick about what it's like to intern in an expensive city full of transitory people. If you're a member, enjoy bonus segments and interview transcripts from Working, in addition to other great podcast exclusives. Start your free 2-week trial of Slate Plus at slate.com/workingplus. What is your name and what did you do at the White House?
So my name is Chase Woods, and I worked in the Office of Political Strategy and Outreach as an intern.
How did you end up at the White House?
In the tail end of last fall, I was sitting at my school's Institute of Politics, hearing an info session about the White House internship program. Kind of thought it was a little bit out of my reach, but I thought, you know, why not apply? After a series of interviews and background checks, and then applying for funding and trying to ration all the money I have, went down there this summer and was there for the past a little more longer than 3 months or so.
What made you want to work there?
Not to be overly personal or anything, but, you know, I'm like a young black man who, you know, wants to be in public service. And so obviously Barack Obama is one of my idols. I mean, I still remember him being inaugurated. I was in eighth grade. And my social studies teacher being like, hold on, like everyone has to watch this. Like, screw the lesson plan. We're going to watch this right now. And so just him as a person and his administration has been pretty impactful for me. And so the fact that they're only having like two classes of interns within the administration, I was like, you know what? You know, just going to swing for the fences, hope everything works out. And then here I am after doing it.
So what were the applications or interviews like? What was that actual process that you went through just to get there in the first place?
The application itself is pretty standard. It asks like who you are, where you've been, what are your credentials, and then a series of like short answer questions like, oh, if you had the chance to ask the chief of staff one question, what would it be or something like that. So they have a little more fun, a little more flexible questions like that. And then there were, I believe, two essays that I had to write and then, you know, sent that off just kind of
crossing my fingers. How long have you been working on that?
Man, I probably spent like, I want to say like a week and a half or 2 weeks or so, which feels like a lot. Like a lot of times, and especially just on campus, I feel like I sometimes leave things for the last minute and I'm like, oh no, this is due in 4 hours. What do I do? But this is something I was really, really hoping I would get. And so I decided to put a little more time and effort into it. And then, you know, sent it off, crossed my fingers, you know, saying my prayers every night. And then heard back maybe 2 months later asking if I could interview the next day.
Was that a phone interview?
It was a phone interview, yeah. It was funny. Actually, when I was telling like my family, like, oh my God, I have an interview, they're like, oh, so they're flying you out? And I was like, no, they're going to sit me down over the phone. And they're like, oh, that's kind of lame. Are you sure you want to do it? And I was like, yeah. And so sat down and talked for maybe like 45 minutes or an hour, a little bit more like about myself, why I wanted to apply for the internship, what my passions were, things like that.
Who were you talking to there?
I was someone in the office. It wasn't like a general someone in like the internship office, but it was the Office of Political Strategy and Outreach that I was talking to. Mm-hmm. And so we talked, it seemed to go pretty well. And then, you know, kind of radio silence for a couple more weeks. And then I got an email saying like, hey, we haven't picked you yet, but here's some more additional documents for you to fill out. And then like a background check happened, and then got a conditional offer pending, you know, just compliance with the qualifications and rules of the internship program, and I believe passing a drug test, which, you know, happened. And yeah, here I am.
So was it a paid internship?
It was not a paid internship. It was unpaid.
Is that true for all White House internships?
I believe so. That is for all White House internships. You're allowed to have outside sources of funding pending approval. So thankfully, I was able to apply for a small stipend for my school, which covered my housing. But otherwise, it is unpaid and DC is expensive.
It is, yeah. What was it like moving to DC? Had you ever lived here before? Had you ever spent time here before?
No, so I'd never lived there, but I had visited when I was like 8 or something with you know, the family. And it's all vague. To be honest, when I was talking to my mom about applying to this, she's like, oh, you're going back to DC. And I was like, what do you mean back? I barely remembered the trip. Hmm. But yeah, so I had never been here, didn't really know what to expect, but was more than pleasantly surprised at what I found. It's a really great town. Lots to do, lots to see. There's a lot of history on like every corner that you walk. So it was nice to walk and feel not a part of that history, but to kind of like be ghosted by that history, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, it's a great city, unbearably hot. Everyone was telling me that it's a disgusting swamp town. And for the most part, that is accurate.
How long were you here? What were you here in the summer then?
Yeah, so I was here the whole summer.
So can you walk us through your first day, the actual whole process? Like, what was it like going through the security gates the first time?
I know people from school who had interned here before, and they had told me a little bit about like first walking through the gates and this expectation of like, it's the best thing that'll ever happen to you. And so it very much was, but at the same time, it was like decently terrifying just because I was like, oh no, I'm not supposed to be here.
Did they issue a badge right away?
So no, so I had to go through a gate and just prove who I am and like why I was there. And then I was provided a badge at a later date. And then, you know, said hi to Secret Service and things like that. All very nice dudes and ladies and people. Then walked through and it really started to hit me like, oh my God, I'm actually standing near the White House. I'm going to work here for the next like 10 or 11 weeks. This is insane. And that kind of didn't wear off for the first couple of days just because it was like an oddly like busy couple days. Like I think it was like my second day, I had to walk over to the White House and Derek Jeter was there for doing something for my brother's keeper. And so he walked by and I remember thinking, man, that guy looks like Derek Jeter. And then I did a double take and I was like, Jesus Christ, that's Derek Jeter. So that the optics of just who walks through those doors kind of hit me for a really long time. And then also, Bernie Sanders is there, I think that same day when he, I think, met with the president about the idea of endorsing Hillary or whatever, and he had his little press conference on the lawn. So that kind of took me off guard for that to be like my first couple of days. But eventually after, you know, just doing the work for a while and getting into like the groove of things, it definitely started to become much more of a job and much more of business as usual.
Did you interact with other interns? Were you the only one in your office or was there a whole pool of people in your position?
So I was the only one in my office, but there are numerous interns in the various other offices, which at first I was like, oh, it's a little bit of a humble brag, you know, like only intern in my office. But boy, it was lonely. So I spent a lot of time by myself and that kind of like propelled me to try and get to know a lot of the other interns with the cohort. That became like a very big part of the experience. Just meeting everybody, seeing where they come from, seeing what they're passionate about, and that's another big part of like the internship is that they really want to try and propel people to make relationships that'll last outside of the White House, hoping that people will connect, whether and that's in a professional or personal capacity, for years to come. Hmm.
Where were you stationed in your time at the White House? Did you have an office, a desk, a cubicle?
Yeah. Thank God it's not a cubicle. I would have been so bored. But no, so it's, I was stationed in a small office with everyone else in my department in the EEOB, which is the Executive Eisenhower Building right next to the White House. That's the one thing they don't tell you. They don't say you're not actually in the White House, which is fine. You know, I'll settle for being like 20 or 30 feet away. So I had my own desk, my own computer set up. You know, I would shout to my supervisor like, oh, hey, how did you want this done? And she would peek her head out and be like, this is how you do it. Or, but yeah, so it was a pretty fairly normal setup.
Was there a point at which it started to just feel like an office?
Yeah, I would say like the first time I got bored, I was like, I kind of caught myself. I was like, oh man, God, today's just dragging. And I was like, wait, I'm at the White House. How is this even possible? And so that was probably like the first moment, just like the first time that I caught myself not having anything to do or finishing my work early that day and just kind of allowing myself to get caught up in the feeling of just like wearing a suit and tie and feeling like I'm in an office. But whenever I needed to remind myself, I'd walk outside and be like, oh, okay. I'm not like selling insurance right now or anything.
You really just got to see the White House itself.
Yeah.
Where you were.
Yeah. And so it's situated where they have like the Navy steps, and my office was like right outside those doors. And so you would just walk out into the Navy steps and be able to see the White House. That was a great walk.
I think that when a lot of us think about the idea of White House internships, for good or for ill, we all remember one particularly benighted internship from the 90s. But I'm sure that there are other misconceptions or misunderstandings that people might have about what it's like to intern at the White House. Were there any that you became conscious of either when you were there or when you were preparing to go? Any kind of myths about it that you'd like to dispel?
So actually, there's one thing that actually I kind of like fell victim to was the idea that everyone who walked into this internship definitely went to Harvard and is someone who's absolutely 100% brilliant, super well involved, and is just like this all-American dandy named Chip or whatever. But that's, you know, it's not very much the case. The people that I met there were from all walks of life. Low-income people on the LGBTQ spectrum, people who were veterans, people who came from the North, the South, Black, White, Latino, Asian, Pacific Islander, like people from all over with very different experiences and very different things that they brought to the table. So I think that's probably the biggest one. People see it as like this elitist thing where it very much didn't feel like that when I was actually there.
So what were your actual duties at the White House? What did you do for the White House in your internship?
So the mission of my office is to kind of like take the political temperature of the country and then advise the administration on like how policy should be delivered or packaged or like what initiatives to take, things like that. So I played a very small role in that. A lot of what I did was like basic research, looking at blogs, looking at polling data, things like that, and trying to like relay that in like a series of reports to my supervisors and higher ups. Occasionally there'd be like a little more detailed research projects. And then obviously like the very lowly duties of being an intern, occasionally running mail, you know, handing all of like the managerial stuff of the office, things like that.
So how many hours a day do you think you worked while you were there?
So my office was weird in that there would be days where it was very busy and days where, at least for, you know, being an intern, not very busy at all. So, but on average, I would say I was maybe working like anywhere from like 9 to 10 or 11 hours a day.
Wow.
Which is, I mean, again, not bad. Like some of those days would just be, you know, I felt bad trying to leave early. And so I would be like, oh, you know, I'll stay until my supervisor stays and I would stay and like read a book for an hour or so. But that's probably the typical day, I would say.
Most of the White House people that we've talked to on this podcast tell us that they never really get to unplug. Did you? Were you expected to be looking at your email and such after you left the office?
So people like higher ups are allowed to kind of like take their work home with them, whereas interns are not. But I would say that I started to understand, like, I would see something appear in the news, and then I would immediately try and think, like, okay, how is this going to impact my day tomorrow? Mm-hmm. So it wasn't necessarily that I couldn't leave the office at the office, but the office just kind of expanded for me, if that makes sense.
Sure.
And so whenever there was like some sort of tragedy that happened or some sort of like event in the world of politics, I was like, oh, I know it. I'm wondering what the blogs are going to say tomorrow. I'm wondering what the polling will look like this in like a week and a half or so. So that was more of my experience as opposed to, you know, feeling like I needed to complete work outside of the office.
Did you find yourself looking at the news or monitoring Twitter or what have you differently than you had before you started?
Yeah. So I started to care a lot more about data, which is the nerdiest response I could have given. But I didn't really pay attention to any of like the polling websites that were out there and how much that informs like political discourse or whatever is happening out in the world. So I started paying attention to that a lot more closely. And I tried to diversify my sources a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so although I would be on Twitter, I was like, oh, I wonder, like I am like a fairly liberal leaning person. And so I follow like a lot of like Democratic congressmen and things like that. So I was like, oh, you know what? I should probably see the other side of the discourse and try and understand that a little bit better. So that really expanded my view and made me try and think of in a little bit more like holistic of a sense.
You've been listening to former White House intern Chase Woods. In a minute, Woods tells us about the question he would have asked the president if only he'd had the opportunity.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
What about just like taking care of the kind of ordinary banalities of life on the White House? Where did you eat while you were there? Did you leave the campus to get lunch or did you eat in the cafeteria?
Yeah. So there's like a small eatery within the EEOB called Ike's Dining, which is like a quick, easy place to go if it's like a busy day. But oftentimes I would leave the campus because, you know, God bless us, there was a Jimmy John's right across the street. There was a Chop, tons of places to eat around. So oftentimes if I found myself with an extra like 15, 20 minutes or so, I would leave a little early, leave the campus, just cross the street and grab a bite to eat.
And there are all those food trucks at Farragut Square too. Did you ever make it there?
No, I never made it to a food truck. Food trucks kind of stress me out because you have to stand on the sidewalk in like the middle of other people walking. And so I always felt like, oh no, I'm going to run into somebody or like I'm going to take too much time. Or it was just a stressful situation to like look at those food trucks and see all those people.
How free were you to wander around the actual campus of the White House? Did you have to go straight to and from your own office in the EOB or was there any opportunity to explore?
If I was lucky enough to need to speak with a supervisor who was stationed in the White House or, like on my first and last day, I got to take like a small tour. That was basically like my main interaction with the White House itself. Most of the time I kind of fell in that mentality of like, oh, I'm at work. And so I should be at work and just be where I need to be, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so the White House, although it's amazing and I would love to spend as much time as possible like in the actual structure of the White House, if I don't have business there, I shouldn't really think about going there or, you know, try and peruse. If the opportunity arose, like if, like again, like a supervisor asked like, oh hey, do you want to take a quick tour or can you meet me here to drop something off, then absolutely I'm gonna basically run there. But otherwise I was just trying to keep it all business.
Do you feel like you were able to contribute to the work that the White House was doing during your time there?
You know, so it's an interesting question because, again, my office was interesting in that there were very slow days and there are very fast days. Mm-hmm. So on the slow days, sometimes I would fall into the mentality of like, ah, man, like what am I really contributing? Am I really doing anything? But then there would be days where things picked up and I would be very encouraged, like, oh man, I'm stepping up. And it took me a little while to realize that even on the slow days where, you know, I might just write a memo or something of that nature, that is a contribution no matter how small, because I don't know the day that like my supervisor is having or that like the rest of the administration is having. So if I can contribute in any way to reduce the work of others, then that in my mind felt like a contribution. And so it was kind of a hurdle to like get over that mentality of like, oh no, I'm not contributing, and then fall into that mindset. But having left after the 10 weeks or so, I very much felt like I had the opportunity to contribute.
Was there any moment when you really felt like an intern?
Yes, in a way of feeling incompetent, like a classic intern move. I forget what the assignment was, so there were two assignments actually. So two supervisors had asked me to do something separately, two totally different assignments. And I hadn't realized that one of them was apparently very time sensitive. And I was interested in the one that was not time sensitive. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to do this one because this one's cool. And so I started doing it. And then I got an email from the supervisor who had asked me about the time sensitive assignment, saying, hey, do you have that for me? And I frantically emailed them back and was like, oh no, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize that you needed it so quickly. I'll do it right now. It'll take me 5 minutes. And then I just got an email back saying, don't worry, I'll do it. And so I felt terrible. And this is like at the very start of the day. And so for like the next like 10 hours, I just kind of like shamefully hung my head at the desk, like, oh my God, I can't believe I messed up like that. But I made it very clear that that was never going to happen again. And thankfully it didn't. But that was probably the one moment where I felt like a small fish in a very big pond, and kind of felt like at the bottom of the food chain.
Do you think that you would want to stay in politics? Did this set of experiences affect your feelings along those lines at all?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of the time when I told people I was going to DC, they kind of like a very negative perception of it, and kind of had that negative perception of politics where it's like, oh, the politicians are crooked, no one's really honest, it's all about money and power and blah 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 blah. But oddly enough, being there has kind of done the exact opposite for me, just because I saw just how hard people actually are working and how hard people actually do care about the issues at hand. So that really reinforced that, you know, there are good people out there doing the work. And then a lot of the negativity that does surround politics, and although that a lot of it is warranted, a lot of it is just perception. And so to be able to be there, that's kind of reinforced for me that politics is like a tool for good, if used correctly, and I would want to use it correctly. And so I think that's encouraged me to try and pursue politics in a really meaningful way.
You know, you were in a kind of uniquely powerless position in a very powerful place. Did it feel like the people around you, though, were powerful people, or did they just feel like people doing their jobs?
I would say definitely the latter. People definitely, you know, just show up to do their jobs. And although I think people understand that they do have power and influence, it's rather just to once again complete the mission of their work, if that makes sense. Like, it doesn't feel like power is misused or is, you know, just feeding people's egos. It's definitely a power that is used to advance the administration's goals of, like, you know, helping and protecting the citizens of the country.
You were, I assume, super excited, especially at first, to be at the White House. Did you have to like dial it down, pull it in, try to be a cool guy in order to not like look like a total dork? I mean, I assume you are a very cool guy and would never look like a total dork, but
no, I assure you it happens on a regular basis. God, I'm trying to think of like a particular instance. There was a day where Merrick Garland, the president's appointee for the Supreme Court, he was walking just like through the EOB with somebody, and like my mouth actually like was agape. And I was like, oh, it's appropriate to wave. And so I waved, and it wasn't really appropriate to wave. And he just kind of like looked at me and I was like, hi there. And I was like, oh no, this is actually awkward. This is actually, he's just trying to go about his day and I'm acting like I'm, you know, I'm meeting like a movie star. I should probably never do this again. And so for the rest of my time there, whenever someone who was very important. Would walk by, I just try to keep my eyes straight and just kind of keep my head down. So that I have a tendency to fangirl sometimes. So that was probably the moment. And when I, and just to go back, Merrick Garland is a wonderful man. It's not like a way of like, he gave me a mean look. It was a look of just like, hi, I don't know you. What's happening? It was me. And then I realized like, oh no, he's just here for business. This is a place of business.
Do you think there's any level at which guys like Merrick Garland, though, just don't really think of themselves as being celebrities, as being someone that anyone would be excited to see in the first place?
Yeah, I think that's also probably a lot of it, especially because like they're, again, just very serious people who care a lot about like what they do. So like, I think when they expect to go to the EOB, they expect to be here for like work related reasons. And so just me as a dummy, seeing him, that probably freaked him out a little bit. But no, so I think a lot of times people in politics, unless you're like at a very, very, very high level, don't necessarily care or carry like an air of celebrity to them, or at least they don't think they do.
Do you think that this experience of operating in the last few months of the administration seemed to shape the tone of the White House during your time there? Did you have any feeling of that kind of transitional quality of the current administration?
Yes and no. I mean, I would say that there's definitely a feeling of a sense of urgency on the part of the administration because there is only a small chunk of time left to be doing as much good as possible, to try and get as much work done as possible. It definitely very much did not feel like a lame duck presidency. People are definitely showing up every day with the idea in mind that, okay, I have one less day than I had the day before, so I need to try and do as much as possible. So it definitely didn't necessarily feel transitional, although I know people are, you know, obviously understand that the transition is right around the corner.
What advice would you offer to someone who wants to work as an intern at the White House, whether in this administration or, since that's probably not possible anymore, in whatever one might be coming down the pipe?
I feel like the internship program kind of shifts a little bit with whatever administration is in power. Granted, I've can't speak for an intern like in the Bush administration or anything like that, but I've heard that this administration has taken like a concentrated effort to make sure that there's a lot of professional development going on, that there's a lot of connection building going on in trying to really cultivate the young leaders that are there. And again, that's not to say that prior administrations haven't done that. I think they've just tried to do it in a much more thoughtful way. Mm-hmm. So, you know, come November, it's hard to say like what my advice would be. But I think some good general advice would just be to fly low and fly straight, to try and, you know, not try and make your time there about, shaking hands and getting coffees, but rather, letting the quality of your work speak for you. So to be known as someone who might be known by a few people to do a really great job and to always get your work done and be on top of all of your stuff, as opposed to just knowing a lot of people and not necessarily being known for anything. Mm-hmm. So I would say that's some pretty true advice that could, well, I don't want to say speak to any administration come November, that that might not hold up for one of the cases, but I think that's probably the advice I would give, is just let the quality of your work speak for you.
Did you actually have to fetch any coffee during your time at the White House?
I got a few coffees. I didn't want to get coffee with people who are like, quote unquote, like big names. Like, I didn't want to get coffee with someone for the sake of like getting coffee. I really wanted to try and talk to people with whom I had like very similar interests, or like potentially had like a similar career path that I might want to try and embark on. So there were a few coffees, but I hope they were good, meaningful coffees that the people would step away from and be like, oh, that kid's all right.
What about fetching coffee, though? Did you ever have to do that?
Oh, I'm so sorry. Is that what you asked?
Yeah, it's fine. Your answer, too, which is great.
I'm so sorry. No, don't worry. I never had to fetch coffee. Thank goodness. Thank goodness I never had to fetch coffee. I would have happily fetched coffee if someone pointed to me and... Yeah, no, if someone had pointed at me just like, hey, kid, cup of coffee, no cream and sugar, I'd be like, absolutely. But no, thank goodness.
Was there anyone who you actually met, spent time to, talked with that really blew your mind? Anyone who the kind of person that you would have never thought you would have met otherwise?
So I got to occasionally sit down with the director of my office, David Seamus. He's a relentlessly optimistic person. And so I think, again, to get back to like that weird DC culture of, you know, it's all corrupt, blah, 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 blah. Meeting him as a person who there is not an ounce of that or of any ounce of like the idea of corruption or just wanting to do this for the sake of power or prestige. That was really refreshing and something that was very encouraging to kind of have him as like a distant role model of like potentially like why I would want to be in politics.
You never had the opportunity to actually meet or talk to the president, though, during your time there?
So they do schedule one meeting with him, like an intern photo op and an opportunity to talk to him and ask him a few questions. And it's actually so funny you're saying this because the president's time is obviously very precious, and so they only take a few questions. And so I was really hoping to ask him mine, but did not get the opportunity.
So what question would you ask him if you could?
So this question is going to sound crazy pretentious. It's not meant to. But so I would have asked essentially like, what would he do if he wrote another book in a vein of other offers? So the question is, in your first book, Dreams for My Father, it felt like you're trying to understand the world you're inheriting. And two of my favorite books, The Fire Next Time and Between the World and Me, are letters to people. Letters to family members, more specifically, about the world they're inheriting. So if you were to write a letter or a book in the vein of these two authors to someone younger about the world they're inheriting, what would you write? And so that was my question, and it unfortunately did not get to be asked.
Hopefully he'll listen to this and answer it.
What I would give. What I would give, man. But
if you could pass one other message on to him after your time at the White House, what would it be?
I'm sure he hears it all the time, and I'm sure he probably does have a great understanding of it because he's met countless people across the country. But I mean, just thanking him for what he's done, and not on like a policy level, but just on a profound level of like, I didn't think I could be president. I mean, I don't think I could be president now, but it's interesting to like look at him and think of what's possible and to think about what he's done for me on a very personal level. Again, which wasn't like his intent. Like he very much wanted to lead the country in very like real, tangible, meaningful ways. But like when I first saw him in person, like when he walked in that room, it really, really, really hit me about what he's been able to do for me on a personal level. So I would definitely just thank him for that.
That's great. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
No, yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Working. I'm Jacob Brogan. We'd love to hear your thoughts about the podcast. Our email address is working@slate.com, and we actually do read all of the emails you send us, so please send them. You can listen to all 7 seasons of Working at slate.com/working. This series was produced by me and Mickey Kapper. Mickey also edits the show. Thanks to Efim Shapiro, and special thanks to Ian Philbrick and Summer Fields, who helped bring this episode together. Our executive producer is Steve Lichtai, and the chief content officer of the Panoply Network is Andy Bowers.